From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this Wednesday edition of Washington Watch. Coming up, House Republicans say there is no evidence of collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia. So they have ended their investigation. But Special Counsel Robert Mueller continues to push. Congressman Brad Winstrup of Ohio is on the House Intelligence Committee. He'll be here in just a moment with the latest on Russia and an update on a House vote earlier today on the Stop School Violence Act. And at this hour, the Democrat and Republican in a special House election in the heart of Pennsylvania's Trump country are divided by a few hundred votes in a nail-biter race that is still too close to call. Former U.S. Senator Rick Santorum of the Keystone State will be here to discuss the race and what it means. Also, many people absorb prepackaged media mantras on watershed moral issues without being aware of their hurtful real-world implications. But Nancy Piercy, professor of apologetics and scholar-in-residence at Houston Baptist University, goes beyond politically correct talking points in her new book, Love Thy Body, Answering Hard Questions About Life and Sexuality. Well, class is in session with Professor Piercy later here on Washington Watch. And we'll also be taking your phone calls a little later in the program. Hey, let me remind you, pastors, Watchmen on the Wall, our national briefing, May the 23rd through the 25th in Washington, D.C. at the Hyatt Regency Capitol Hill Hotel. More details to come on that. Great opportunity to gather with other pastors across the country. By the way, I was speaking with some pastors gathered from the state of Louisiana today. Great gathering with them, sponsored by the Family Forum, Louisiana Family Forum. Anyway, might get a chance to talk about that later as well. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, on Monday, the House Intelligence Committee ended its Russian election meddling probe. GOP members say the investigation had come to the end of its usefulness. Meanwhile, the special counsel, Robert Mueller, continues his investigation into President Trump and so-called Russian collusion, even though interviewing many dozens of witnesses has produced no results. Joining us now is Congressman Brad Winstrup. He represents the 2nd Congressional District of Ohio. He serves on the Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, as well as the House Armed Services Committee. He is also a recent recipient of the FRC True Blue Family Award. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate it.
I understand you've just stepped off the floor to join us as the House is voting. Before we get into the Russian probe and the report by the House Intelligence Committee, give us an update. Earlier today, the House voted on the Stop School Violence Act, passed overwhelmingly. What's in the bill? What will it do?
Well, this is a bill that would reauthorize, modify, expand the Department of Justice program that awards grants to state and local governments so that they can improve their security. These grants, they really they go to schools that can make an evidence-based investment into the operation of school threat assessment to help schools to be prepared to intake and triage threats and try and prevent from tragedy from striking. It puts in place reporting systems for students that want to engage with law enforcement if they see something. There's training, technical assistance for students and for the school personnel and law enforcement. And really, you know, the key is to identify warning signs of violence and intervene early and prevent things like the horrific attacks that we have seen and more recently down in Florida, which has obviously been very emotional for the whole country to see this taking place.
My take on the bill as I look through it is that it basically tried to fill some gaps in our current structure, focused on mental illness reporting. This is not the measure that some would have in trying to restrict gun ownership and that sort of thing.
Yeah, you know, this is interesting because Mr. Rutherford, who comes from law enforcement to put this bipartisan bill together, he did it before the last shooting took place. And so this just brought it more to the forefront, and I think we were pleased to bring it to the floor of the House today and get it passed.
And I would imagine that given the backdrop of what happened in Florida, that this will be taken up in the Senate and passed in the Senate.
Well, I'll be honest with you, Tony. I never know what the Senate's going to do, to be honest with it. But you would think that this would be something that would make it to one of the tops of the list over on the Senate side. But we've sent hundreds of bills to the Senate in the past year, and most of those are sitting somewhere. Unfortunately, yeah. I'm just being frank with you, but I hope.
Yeah, they tend to play games, but this should land right in front of Chuck Schumer. And
I would hope that it makes it to the front of the class. Yep.
Yeah. Well, Congressman Winthrop, let's talk about you're on the House Select Committee on Intelligence. After months of looking into this, the committee released a report that says there is no evidence to suggest that there was collusion between the Trump campaign and Russian officials.
That's right. You know, this has been going on for 14 months. We've looked at over 300,000 documents. We've had 73 interviews. And it's been kind of exhausting. And we've spent time with some people for 9 hours or so. And just really nothing that we're finding there. Now, we've made some recommendations to protect our elections going forward into 2018, and we're going to put out some findings. There were some things that maybe some people should not have done. We point that out, but there's no evidence of collusion with really either campaign, unless you consider that the dossier that was used, that was paid for by the Clinton campaign and the Democrat National Committee, included Russian and supposedly included some Russian intelligence in that. And that was an anti-Trump document. So, but other than that, we really have not seen any evidence of out and out colluding with the Russians. Now, do we see where the Russians have tried to engage and to create dysfunction in our society? Absolutely. We absolutely do. And we would agree with a lot of that, but we do disagree with the conclusion that Putin favored Trump. I mean, that really what we found is that they presumed Clinton would be the winner, and so they went, and you would say, I guess they were for Bernie Sanders in the primary, and then for Donald Trump as he won the Republican primary. But really, it was the effort to create disarray than really having a favorite in the race.
Well, Congressman Winthrop, your colleagues on the other side of the aisle have expressed outrage and vow to fight on continuing investigating this, making this an issue. Has this become now more of a political issue than it really is a legitimate investigation?
No, it seems like it to me. To be honest with you, the impression I was getting is that there were those that wanted to just keep this going as long as they possibly could to keep it on the political radar. You know, outside of the Intelligence Committee room for the last 14 months, there have been every day cameras and a podium. And every day it would be the other side going out to the cameras and the podium. Today, when we went down there, they were not there. So look, we have an investigative role at times. We have oversight role all the time. If there's some new evidence or something that you want to bring forward that we should take a look into, then we would do that. But we have not seen evidence of collusion, and yet we've heard for the last 14 months from the other side that they say they got evidence of collusion, yet they have failed to bring it to us in the committee. So we're going to go through the process of getting it ready, let them take a look at it. If they want to add their own, that's fine. And we want to get it to our colleagues in the House and then go through the process where we may have an unclassified version that the public can see.
So, Congressman Winthrop, in this process of the 14 months of the investigation, the hearings that you held, the 72 interviews that I believe you said that you did, this was not just the Republican members. This was the Republican and Democrats that were involved in this process, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And we were bringing in the people that they suggested that they wanted to interview. But the list was just getting, to me, further and further away from anything. And we're just not finding anything there. Now, we are not involved with the Mueller investigation. That is a separate thing. We're not supposed to know what he's doing. And we don't know. So that's fine. But this is where we are at this point. And you can call it an initial report if you want. If there's something else that comes up that we need to look into, we will. I can tell you that we conducted ourselves very professionally, willing to accept if there were misdeeds done by Republicans and collusion with Republicans at any level. We were willing to embrace that, but we haven't seen that.
So what is the next step with this report, Congressman?
Well, the next step is we have about 10 days or so. It will be next week sometime, later next week. The Democrats have an opportunity to review it and either create their own report or sign off on ours or add an appendix to ours. We'll see what they decide to do. And that'll take place in about 8 or 9 days, I guess, maybe 10 days.
And then that will be forwarded to the full House?
Yes, and then we'll vote to forward it to the entire House, right.
So what do you anticipate the Democrats doing, providing their own counter report? What do you think they'll do at this point?
Well, I think it'll be somewhat similar to when we had our memo on another topic, basically, but they're going to present some of their concerns, but I don't think they're going to be able to produce any evidence of collusion. And I think they're going to continue to say that this should have gone on further. But again, if they have something that they feel relevant that we should take a look into, we'll consider that.
All right. I know they just called votes for you on the House floor, so I want to let you get down there and do the work for your constituents. Congressman Brad Winstrup, as always, great to talk with you. Thanks for being on the program.
You bet, Tony. You have a great evening. Thanks.
All right. You do the same. Congressman Brad Winstrup of Ohio. Look, I just agree with what he said. Based on the information I see, Russia is a bad actor. I mean, we're seeing what's happening right now over in the UK and what they're doing in Britain. And, you know, Putin is one to watch. And I hope that I would like to see the president actually get a little more aggressive with Putin. And I'm not quite sure. I was talking about this with Joel Rosenberg a week before last. Why, you know, he just doesn't seem to be willing to take him on as much as he does, you know, what he called Little Rocket Man over in North Korea. And others, and I'm hoping he'll be prompted maybe with the new Secretary of State. Hopefully, Mike Pompeo confirmed in a Secretary of State understands the dangers of Russia. You know, I think military leaders understand the threat. Hopefully, our diplomatic corps will see the threat of Russia. And they are going to continue to try to meddle in our politics. But I think what you're seeing here is trying to conflate the two issues, trying to bring somehow Trump in with Putin. This report, investigation from the House Intelligence Committee, shows no evidence of collusion. Were the Russians trying to do stuff? Absolutely. Was someone conspiring with him in the Trump campaign? They say no. But as Congressman Winstrup pointed out, Mueller is going to continue to do his investigation. All right. Still to come here on Washington Watch, we're going to have, when we come back, we're going to be joined by former U.S. Senator Rick Santorum of Pennsylvania to give us the latest on a nail-biter of a race, special election in the 18th Congressional District there in Pennsylvania. We're going to talk about that next and what it might mean for this fall. You're listening to Washington Watch. We're coming back right after this.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, that's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As Senior Director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Hear Mr. Arnakis discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, the race in Pennsylvania's 18th Congressional District, a special election, is still too close to call after Tuesday's election. The difference between the two candidates is about 700 votes. With us now is someone who knows the area very well, former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum and former presidential candidate. Rick, welcome back to Washington Watch.
And former congressman from that very district. So I do know you pretty well.
I didn't know that. The 18th district.
That was my district.
Well, what happened after you left?
Well, actually, when I left, was won by a Democrat. But when I represented that area, you know, that area has changed. I got elected in 28 years ago to the House of Representatives in the 18th district, and it was at that time about a +4 or +5 Democratic district, and then they redistricted me to a +10 or +11 Democratic district, but I won both. Then I went and ran for the Senate, won the Senate, but when I ran for the Senate, that district was taken over by a Democrat, and that same Democrat is still in office today. His district moved to the city of Pittsburgh. They created an open district in 2002, and that's where Tim Murphy won and has served there for 16 years. So it became a redistricted. About a third of my old district is in the current district.
Now, the Republican Rick Scone been criticized as not a strong candidate. The Democratic candidate Connor Lamb, young Marine veteran. Running as a conservative, somewhat moderate conservative, pro-gun, pro-God.
Yeah.
But you know what? That's the same. That's really the same playbook that they used back in 2006 when the Democrats were able to take control of the House. They went out and found conservative Democrats to run.
Yep.
So is that what this? Exactly what's going on here? What do we know about this race right now?
No, that's exact. Well, as far as what's going on about the race, look, it's 670 votes or something like that, and I think the likelihood of any kind of recount. I mean, here's the problem with this district. It goes away in 6 months. I mean, the Supreme Court This is the power play the Democrats always make. They got control of the Supreme Court for the first time in many, many years through the last election. And so they the Democrats filed a lawsuit, and the Democrat Supreme Court threw out five-year-old congressional maps and said, we're going to redraw them ourselves, basically. And so they redrew them to make them more Democratic. In so doing, they redrew this district that this special election was in. And now neither of the people who either Rick Saccone or Connor Lamb live in the 18th congressional district anymore. And so they're both probably going to move into other districts well, they live in the 18th district, but they don't, it's now the city of Pittsburgh district, which neither one of them can win against the Democratic incumbent who's in there. So one might move north and the other guy might move south. So this district doesn't really exist. I can't imagine they're going to spend a whole lot of money on a district that is going to only exist for six more months. And so I think probably the race will end with Lamb being the winner.
So is this a harbinger, as some are saying, you know, with how this is going to play out when it comes to the midterm elections for Republicans and Democrats?
Well, yes and no. I think there's no question that, as you would expect, Tony, in a midterm election with a president who is, you know, controversial, and this president certainly is controversial. You go back to 2010, and Barack Obama was controversial in his first reelect. You go back to George Bush, not so controversial. I mean, it was right after 9/11. The country was feeling fairly unified. You go back to, you know, 1994 as the first term of Clinton. Very controversial president. Well, the three controversial, the two of the three controversial presidents, Clinton and Obama, buried that election year for the part for the Democrats. The year where Bush was not so controversial, that, you know, he did very well. You go fast forward to 2006, midterm Bush again, and it was a landslide for the Democrats. So I would make the argument that when you have a controversial president, and certainly Trump is that, that energizes the other side. The other side is probably going to have a good year, and you're seeing that. And unless the party in power, the Republicans and the president, can energize your team by doing things that can energize them. And I think that's really the problem here. Is the president's done some good things, and obviously Neil Gorsuch is a good thing. If we had another Supreme Court justice, that would probably help. This summer, that would be a great motivator, I think, for folks, particularly if it holds out over the election. So there are some things that can happen, but not repealing and replacing Obamacare is going to be a big dent in enthusiasm. Some of the other things that, you know, the reforms that were promised, not really happening in the Senate and the House. And so I think there is a little lackluster feeling out there among Republicans.
So you really have to have a candidate that is really capturing people's imagination. And,
yeah,
you know, I don't know Rick Saccone, but I mean, I didn't hear great things about him being a charismatic candidate. And I don't, you know, not saying anything negative about
him. Yeah, I mean, I see the folks going out there and sort of, you know, dancing on his grave a little bit. But look, Rick Saccone's a state House member. He's a good state House member. He is a terrific pro-lifer. I mean, he's one of the pro-life leaders in the state House in Pennsylvania. That's how he got the nomination, frankly,
right,
because of his strong stance on that. But is he a dynamic guy? Not particularly, but I mean, he's not undynamic, but he's just...
But Congress is filled with people like that who are good policy guys who get the work done. Who
good
are not
policy guys. But
this is a special election. A lot of attention, a lot of outside money came into this.
Yeah.
My take is, in the fall, it's got to be more about continuing a conservative governing agenda as opposed to particular members of Congress.
I couldn't agree more that we got to have something to run on. And that's right now we're not doing it.
Yeah. Rick Santorum, as always, good to talk with you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, my friend. Bye-bye now.
All right. Former U.S. Senator Rick Santorum. All right. So Rick Saccone, Connor Lamb. Looks like Connor Lamb, the Democrat, will hold this seat, although it's still close. They're still counting votes. All right. Class is in session when we return. Professor Nancy Pearson is here with her latest book. We're going to be talking about that with her. And then a little bit later, I'm going to be taking your phone calls. So don't go away. We're coming back right after this.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website is tonyperkins.com. Twitter, it's at T Perkins. Right, the new sexual revolution challenges scientific as well as biblical views of gender. I mean, it's mind-boggling. On any given day, you can be whatever you feel like being. I mean, this low view of the body and this high view of self-interest is driving the mind-body dualism behind gender dysphoria. I mean, it is mind-boggling. It's the only way you can describe it. Well, in Love Thy Body, Answering Hard Questions About Life and Sexuality, best-selling author Nancy Piercy goes beyond politically correct talking points to examine the dehumanizing secularist ethos that shapes critical moral and socio-political issues of our day. With us now is the author herself, Nancy Piercy. She is a professor of apologetics and scholar in residence at Houston Baptist University. Nancy, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Now, let me just start with this question. Why did you write the book?
I wrote the book because the watershed moral issues of our day are things like abortion, assisted suicide, homosexuality, transgenderism, and so on. And typically, people try to make sense of these issues separately, one by one. So I wrote Love Thy Body to help people realize that we'll be much more effective if we understand that they all share a common set of principles or core convictions. We can call it secular liberalism. And what I do is I show that it's a philosophy that undermines human dignity and human rights. And precisely because of what you said in the introduction, it's a philosophy that's based on a low view of the body, on biology, and therefore ends up degrading human rights and human dignity. You mentioned the most obvious example, which is transgenderism. The transgender narrative insists that gender has nothing to do with biological sex. The BBC documentary says at the heart of the debate is the idea that your mind can be at war with your body. And then in that war, it's the mind that wins. And so what I say in Love Thy Body is, why accept such a demeaning view of the body? Kids down to the age of kindergarten are now being estranged from their body. They're being taught that their identity has nothing to do with their body. And I suggest a better solution is to recover a higher view of the body. I recently read an article written by a 14-year-old girl. She had lived as a trans boy for 3 years, from age 11 to 14, and then detransitioned back to reclaim her identity as a girl. And she wrote an article saying the turning point came when she realized it's okay to learn to love your body. And the article came out after my book was already in print, but I thought, what a great quote for a book titled Love Thy Body. In the book, I'm trying to reach out to people and help them move beyond a negative message, which is kind of what we're known for, right? It's a sin. It's wrong. Don't do it. The thou shalt not. But we can reach out to people with a positive message, helping them to see that a biblical ethic overcomes this dichotomy between body and person, and that leads to self. It overcomes the self-alienation. It creates internal harmony and wholeness. And we really are happier when we live with our minds in tune with our bodies. That gives us a positive message to coach the public, which, of course, is going to go over a whole lot better than a negative message. We can reach out with a message of wholeness and healing.
Nancy Piercy, this issue has become, I mean, in the last decade, it's just like peaked where, you know, now this is a very prevalent conversation point with young kids, even in elementary schools. We're hearing about this all the time, this rush to allow people to choose their gender. What's bringing this about? What's behind this?
Yeah, what's behind it is a negative view of the body comes from a negative view of nature, because every ethic actually stems from a view of nature. And so it's coming from a materialist view that says nature is a product of blind, undirected material forces, that nature has no purpose or meaning. In the book, I quote a New Yorker article that says the loyalty oath of modernity, which is a great phrase. In other words, if you want to have loyalty to the modern worldview, you have to accept that life is without meaning or purpose. Well, so what does that mean? It means the body is reduced to a collection of cells and organs and tissues, no different from any other chance configuration of matter. And as a result, the mind is free to use the body any way it wants. Listen to the words of Camille Paglia. You no doubt know Camille Paglia. She is an outspoken lesbian. And she defends homosexuality in just these terms. She says, okay, I acknowledge that nature has made us male and female, that humans are a sexually reproducing species. But then she asks, why not defy nature? After all, fate, not God, has given us this flesh, and we have absolute claim to our bodies and may do with them as we see fit. So that's where
Nancy, we're up against a break. Can you hang on through the break?
Excellent, yes.
Okay, because I want to finish this conversation. I got a couple of more questions for you. I find this, I was going to say I find it fascinating, but I have to deal with it every day. But I find that this is a very important issue that people need to understand. I think you've put it in between two covers that can help people understand it. So we're coming back with Nancy Piercy. Don't go away. Class is still in session. We're right back after this.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, that's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Thanks for joining us on this Wednesday afternoon. If you miss anything on your way home, you can find it later tonight, all archived at TonyPerkins.com. All of our guests right there, TonyPerkins.com. All right, Nancy Piercy, my guest, talking about her new book, Love Thy Body. Okay, Nancy, I want to ask you this question. When we were having this discussion, what was fueling this, what was behind this? Is part of this the sexualization of our culture, where everything is sexualized and we don't measure up? And so since we can't measure up to what the standards that the society has created, these false standards, we're just totally confused and want to go a different direction.
Yeah, certainly that's part of it. And I would certainly agree with you that culture has become very sexualized. But I think it goes a step beyond that as well. And in my book, Love Thy Body, I talk about how people no longer really see themselves as part of their body. They don't see their body as part of their personal identity. Let's take the question of homosexuality, for example. Nobody really denies that on the level of biology, physiology, anatomy, biochemistry, that males and females are counterparts to one another. That's how the human sexual and reproductive system is designed. So if you adopt a same-sex identity, essentially you're contradicting that design. You're saying implicitly, why should the structure of my body inform my psychological identity? Why should my biological sex, as male or female, have any say in my moral choices? That's a profoundly disrespectful view of the body. So what we can do is help people to recognize now, the Christian ethic is not merely a matter of negatives, don't do this, don't do that, but it's actually affirming the value, dignity, and significance of the body. It's saying you should respect the structure of your body. Your body should have a voice in who you are and what your moral choices are. In Love Thy Body, I give lots of personal stories of real people. And one of my favorite is actually the opening story in the homosexual chapter. And it's Sean Doherty, who was a young man who was once exclusively attracted to other men. And today he's married and has three children. So what changed? Sean said, I stopped defining my identity by my sexual feelings, and I started regarding my physical body as who I was. And so his goal was not to try to change his feelings directly, which doesn't usually work. He said, my goal was to receive what I had already, to acknowledge what I already had. I had a male body. I received it as a good gift from God. So you see, what really is at stake in the sexuality debate is the question, what kind of world do we live in? Is it a cosmos that's operating by purely material forces and has no meaning or purpose, and you can do with your body whatever you see fit, as we were talking about before the break? Or is it a cosmos ordered by a divine purpose,
right,
in which your body itself speaks to who you are and gives grounds for your moral decisions?
See, I think, Nancy, as for the last decade, have seen this, watched this unfold, and been on the front row. The spiritual side of this is, I think it is, and some will take issue with this, but I think we are spiritual beings. I mean, we are created, as you talked about. We're not just some accident here. We were created by God. We're spiritual beings with a body. And the spiritual side, I see this as a rebellion against God. I mean, we've gone from God can't tell me what to do to where it's progressed to where God can't tell me what I am.
Yes, and the interesting thing, though, is that where people acknowledge that Christianity speaks to the spiritual realm, but what many people have lost is that Christianity also speaks to the physical realm. And we have lost touch with our own heritage on this. In other words, if you go back to the early Christian church, the early church was surrounded by world-denying philosophies that had a low view of the material world, just like modern secularism does. Those were different reasons. The church was surrounded by philosophies like Platonism and Gnosticism, which treated the material world as a place of death, decay, and destruction. In fact, Gnosticism taught that there were several levels of spiritual beings and that this world was created by a low-level deity, an evil god, in fact, because
they couldn't touch. Yeah, it couldn't touch the material because it was so tainted.
That's exactly it. So in that context, Christianity was nothing short of revolutionary because it said, no, it was the highest God. It was the supreme deity who created the material world, and he pronounced it very good. An even greater scandal at the time was the incarnation, because that said God himself entered the material world and took on a human body. So the incarnation is the ultimate affirmation of the dignity of the body. And finally, at the end of time, God is not going to scrap the material world as if he made a mistake the first time around. He's going to renew it and restore it and create a new heaven and a new earth. In the Apostles' Creed, we affirm the resurrection of the body. So this is an astonishingly high view of the physical world. There is nothing like it in any other religion or philosophy. And that's why Lovely Body gives people the tools to make a surprising new case that, yes, Christianity cares about the spiritual realm, but Christianity also gives a higher view of the physical realm than any other worldview out there.
And they've got to be balanced. I mean, you have to tend to the spirit to have the full understanding of the body, that we are created in God's image. Therefore, we have value that is inherent in the image and in whose image we're created.
Yeah, that's a good point, because many people think that these sexual issues, the problem is we have too high a view of the physical world, and in fact, it's the opposite. Because they don't acknowledge the spiritual, they have too low a view of the body. Let's take another example. I have a chapter in Love Thy Body on the hookup culture. And mm-hmm. once again, it's denying the unity of the body and the person. Basically, the hookup culture says you can have sexual relations totally cut off from the whole person. No love, no relationship, no commitment. In fact, I quote several college students, and the quotes are very poignant. Alicia was a college student who says, hookups are very scripted. You learn to turn off everything except your body. you make yourself emotionally invulnerable. And so what are they saying? They're saying basically the hookup culture denies who I am as a whole person. And this does not give the body too much importance. It gives the body too little importance. In Rolling Stone magazine, a young man was quoted actually saying, sex is just a piece of body touching another piece of body. It is existentially meaningless. So our message to people needs to be, again, positive. It's that we have a higher view of the body because we have a spiritual view. We also have a higher view of the body.
Yes, and we need to teach our children that, because it is not just some kind of abstract physical activity that one engages in, but as the scripture makes very clear, it is the uniting of two flesh into one. And there is a spiritual component there that I think, and we don't have time to go through all of that, but it is, this is very important. How can folks get a copy of your book, Nancy?
Certainly Love Thy Body is available at places like Amazon and ChristianBook.com and all the online stores, and it's available in your local Christian bookstore as well.
I think every pastor should have this in their library, and I think parents should read this to help really kind of deprogram many of their kids that are getting contrary messages in our public schools. Now, Nancy, before I let you go, one important point that you've made is, as we work through controversial moral issues, that it's crucial to bear in mind that the main goal is not, and I make this point in a different way, it's not to win an argument or persuade people to change their behavior. It's to tear down the barriers to becoming Christian. And that's what my point is always, that we're to speak from a redemptive heart, meaning that our goal is to win the hearts and minds of people to the kingdom of God.
Right. And what I've found interesting and surprising is that if you read the customer reviews on Amazon and reviews that have been posted on Facebook, one of the things that people say over and over again is they picked up Love Thy Body thinking they were going to learn a few handy arguments about current issues. And they said, but what I found is that it's transforming me, that it's giving me a whole different understanding of the Christian worldview. But they were trapped in the sacred secular split more than they realized. You know, the idea that sacred things, religious things are what really important, and the secular world is not really so important, including issues of the body. And they've come to realize that they had a less than biblical view of these issues. And so it's been fascinating to me to see how many people, the most recent customer review that was just posted on Amazon yesterday said, this book is transforming my entire perspective. Another person said, this book has changed me more than any other book in the Bible. So What's fascinating is that it is addressing, like you said, more than just giving people handy answers. It's addressing their whole understanding of what it means to have a Christian worldview.
Nancy Piercy, thank you so much for joining us. And I'm going to encourage folks to pick up a copy of your book, Love Thy Body.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
You are absolutely welcome. Nancy, Professor Nancy Piercy, you can go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Follow the links over. My class is not out of session yet. We're still going here. I got on this yesterday just as we were coming to a conclusion, and it fits today, too. Yesterday we had Bill Bennett, former Secretary of Education, certainly a professor as well. We were talking about the school violence and the task force that the president's put together trying to bring some solutions to this. And it's just really kind of dovetails with what we were talking about with Nancy in terms of human sexuality. And I was actually having this conversation with a pastor this morning, talking about, you know, in the last, since I was in first elected to office 20 some years ago, in my home state of Louisiana, there's become a real sharp partisan divide. When I was elected, Steve Scalise, who's been on the program many times, House Majority Whip, we were elected the same time in the House of Representatives in Louisiana. And I think we hit a high water mark of maybe, I don't know, somewhere in the 38 Republicans out of 144. I mean, we were an extreme minority. We worked together. Party labels didn't really matter. We worked together across, we didn't really have party lines. We just worked together. That's changed, and it's changed all across the country. Now, I can explain why I think it changed in Louisiana, but I'm not going to go into that. The point is that we've become a very divided nation politically, culturally. And I was talking to this pastor. He said, we really need to bring people back together again. I agree. We need to have conversations. We need to come together. But part of what brings us together, I think, that can be the cohesion historically that has brought us together has been religion. Oh, no, that divides. Well, it divides today. It didn't always divide. And part of reaching these problems, we were talking about economic problems, the various states that are having tremendous economic challenges because of the breakdown of the family and the cost associated with that. Well, we're never going to solve the problem until we're willing to deal with the source, until we're willing to say, you know what, one of the reasons we're having so many high social costs is because we have fathers that abandon their children, neglect them either physically or emotionally. People are not taking responsibility for themselves. Well, that gets back to morals. And as I was wrapping up yesterday, we can't have morality without religion. And I was talking about George Washington's farewell address to the nation. Now, I just pulled a portion of that so I could actually quote it for you. Now, according to scholars, it was Washington more than any other who made possible our Republican form of government. Now, he rejected offers to make him king and was one of the first leaders in world history to turn over power willingly, one of America's great democratic traditions. As the battle over religious freedom intensifies in our country, we must remember and proclaim the words of Washington himself in his farewell address published on September 19, 1796. In David Claypool's American Daily Advertiser. It's where it was published. According to the Library of Congress's exhibit, Religion and the Founding of the American Republic, Washington's farewell address is one of the most important documents in American history. Washington's prestige gave him views, gave him great authority, and this excerpt on a religion and politics have been quoted in discussions ever since the words first appeared. This is it. Quote, of all of the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. In vain would that man claim the tribute of patriotism who should labor to subvert these great pillars of human happiness, these firmest props of the duties of men and citizens. As I said, he excoriates those who would try to separate religion and morality. He says, in vain would that man claim the tribute of patriotism who should labor to subvert these great pillars of human happiness, these firmest props of the duties of men and civilizations? The mere politician, equally with the pious man, ought to respect and cherish them. A volume could not trace all their connections in private and public happiness. And then he goes on to say, and let us with caution indulge the supposition that morality can be maintained without religion. All right, folks, out of time again today. So class is out, but remember this, when you've done everything you can do, you got it. Just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.